Money Roadshow, episode number 240. My name is John Morgan. Cole Coffee is not with me right now, but he will be with me momentarily. He's just finishing up a little bit of work in his room. I think he actually went to go grab a little slice of pizza because we are in New York City for UFC 244. The young Mike Bond is with us as well. He'll be with us in just a moment as well to talk all about UFC 244. The BMF title is on the line. Cover your ears, kids. The baddest motherfucker is going to be crowned. It is Jorge Masvidal and Nate Diaz going up against it in the headliner, and it is it's been a bit of an adventure. Listen, it's been a bit of an interesting week. Of course, we're all expecting a great fight. I mean, how can you not be hyped up for this fight? And I'll just say right now, it has got that big fight feel. The amount of media, the number of people paying attention, I mean, the interviews and the scrums, it's been feeling like a Conor McGregor, Ronda Rousey, Brock Lesnar type level of interest in this fight, and I think it's going to end up being a home run for the UFC. But for me, man, this fight week started a week ago. Now, I was actually on vacation last week. I took some time off just to get some stuff done around the house. You know how it is. You got to burn some days. They get used up. You turn them in at the end of the year, and if you don't use them, you're just giving them back to the company. So I took a couple days off, and of course we did the road show anyway. You still got fresh content. You know, we always do that. But I was taking a couple days off, and Friday afternoon, I guess it would be evening time really. My son and I were downtown in Las Vegas. We were helping set up for this grappling tournament that he would actually compete in the next day. Gold medal and a silver medal, by the way. I'll just say for the little man. In this past weekend's jiu-jitsu tournament, which that was a story in itself. But we're there setting up. If you set up, if you volunteer to set up, they waive your registration fee. So it saves $90. Plus, I thought, it's a good lesson for the kid. Come in and help out and, kind of put some work effort into getting set up for the tournament and everything and feel like you're a part of it. So anyway, we're doing that, and I get a phone call from a USC staff member who says, hey, what are you doing? Can you get to the office right now? And I'm like, well, I kind of can't, actually. I volunteered to do this help, and I'm, these people are kind of counting on me. I said, well, we kind of need you to get here. So I was like, all right. So I went and explained to the people that I was volunteering with. I'm like, hey, I know this is weird. I'm an MMA reporter. I got to go. Sorry about that. So I left and went to the office. And to be honest, had no idea what we were there for. Now, of course, the Nate Diaz situation was up in the air. And so we assumed it was related to the Nate Diaz situation. And to be honest, at that point, assumed that, the fight was maybe going to be off. Even though I was off, I was, kind of talking to some people and trying to get, answers and messages back and forth. And wasn't getting a lot of answers, basically. It was a lot of questions. And so I thought, man, they're going to call this fight off. And man, we're supposed to go to New York next week. And no offense, because it's a good card. There's a lot of good fights in this card. But, man, if it was Gastelum and Till and the headliner, no disrespect to those guys, it just wouldn't have that same energy, man. It wouldn't be that same type of fight. So showed up, myself, Kevin Ioli, Brett Okamoto were there for reporters, and I had to take my son with me. I did tell him, I was like, listen, my wife is out with some friends, and my son was with me, and he's with me, so he's going to have to come. They said, well, that's fine. We'll, bring him along. So little man went with me to the UFC office, and we were ushered into Hunter Campbell's office, and we sat down, and that's where Hunter Campbell and Jeff Nowitzki kind of laid out what happened. And I'm sure you saw the reports, the headlines were out. I'm sure you read the quotes. We weren't allowed to shoot video. We were asked not to. Hunter admitted he was exhausted. He had been working on it for a couple days. They'd been trying to get everything done. And I think he just didn't want to be on camera. I mean, that's a different level, right? I mean, you got to have some readiness or some preparedness or some comfortability. But we were allowed to record the audio. And listen, it's a meeting. It's not the most, this is not fighter trash talking. This is not maybe the most entertaining media, and maybe I shouldn't be setting it up that way because I think it's pretty riveting. But to me, more than anything, I think it's very telling, man. I think it's very educational. Some of the quotes have been read, but I don't know. I kind of like for you to get that experience of what we experienced that night, to see what you feel, to see how it sounds to you. Because listen, man, this situation is starting to get a little bit more frequent. I mean, as you'll hear in here, as the sensitivity on this testing continues to develop, Man, you know, this is, you know, kind of very much related to the John Jones situation. Picograms, you know, small little tiny amounts. But you know, the UFC executives certainly did not believe that Nate Diaz is a cheater. And I know that's not a controversial statement. I don't think most people believe that Nate Diaz is a cheater. I think that's why this one caught us all so off guard. But I don't know. I thought it would be good because there hasn't been an official record of this out there. And we try to bring you on the road. We try to bring you behind the scenes a little bit of a part of our job. And I thought, hey, you know, maybe it would make sense to hear some of this conversation. Now, it ended up being about a 45, 50-minute conversation. I'm certainly not going to play all of that for you. I know at that point you'd probably be bored. Shout out to my kid at 7 years old who sat through 45 minutes of this and didn't make a sound. I had to give him very much props that he was very quiet, very polite, and very respectful. And I had to give him major praise for that. And I took him out to go get some food of his choice, some treats of his after that, because he certainly deserved it. But anyway, here's the choice stuff. You're going to hear the familiar voice of Jeff Nowitzki in there. That's a big portion of what you're going to hear. And then you'll also hear Hunter Campbell, who you may not know his voice very well, but that's the other voice that you're going to hear in here besides my own. Hunter Campbell is now just a job title just changed to Chief Business Officer. But he, you know, behind the scenes, he's a big part of UFC operations and is involved in a lot of day-to-day stuff. So he was very, very involved in this as well. So anyway, I guess before we get to UFC 244, man, you got to know how we got here, right? I mean, we almost didn't get here. But this was the moment that we found out the fight was still happening inside UFC headquarters last Friday night.
How do you guys want to do it? You guys want to start with a statement or anything?
Why don't you explain to us just what happened?
Yeah, I mean, well, as you can read in this statement, so we were notified of a couple of recent tests on Nate Diaz that came back showing very, very low levels of a substance called LGD4033, also known as Ligandrol. Substance is a SARM, selective androgen receptor modulator. Not only LGD4033, but Ostarine's been in the news a lot. SARMs, and I've been talking about this, you know, in the public for a while, probably the biggest culprit in terms of supplement contaminations. And so, you know, anytime that we now get calls from USADA about a SARM positive, first question is, what are the levels? In this case, Nate's levels were very, very small. Basically, you know, the term picograms came up in the John Jones thing, which is a trillionth of a gram. And so these levels were in the double digit picograms. We obviously, you know, knowing Nate's background, knowing that, you know, how he, plant-based vegan, very outspoken against, you know, cheaters in sports, anabolic steroid users, immediately thought, man, you know, very similar to Neil Magny, this is guy's probably the least likely candidate that you'd ever seen, so what's going on here? So in any of these cases, when this happens from USADA, my department, which is me and Donna Marcolini, go into action, calling our sources, asking about the drugs, and obviously one of the first things we ask the athlete is, what supplements were you using? So we, you know, interacted with Nate and or his team over the last week, and got the supplements that he was using. They were sent to the Smyrtle Sports Medicine Research Testing Laboratory in Salt Lake City, which is run by Dr. Daniel Eichner, and tested this week. And literally, of the batch of samples, the last sample they put on the machine turned up positive for the LGD4033. Now, it's noted in the statement here, and I think this is, you know, this is really the money point on this issue, that the amount, and, you know, I've talked about what a picogram is and talking about, you know, one trillionth. It's very hard to wrap your head around that, but USADA science experts basically did the calculation, and with the amount of contaminant, it would have taken the ingestion of 10,000 of these capsules. They were in capsules, which right away that they're very difficult to tamper with a capsule. You know, if it's powder, it'd be easy to sprinkle some in. A capsule, you'd have to open it, inject it, whatever. There was no evidence of that. What's that?
You're talking about the supplement.
The supplement, yeah. Correctly.
Basically, the level that he had in his system is the equivalent, correct, of 1/10,000th of one therapeutic dose.
So you'd have to take 10,000 capsules to take the equivalent of one dose of LGD-4033. So I think that's pretty easy for the layman to understand what a small, small level that is. So, I mean, it makes sense, and we confirmed it as well, that no athletic performance enhancing benefit from that. Our suspicions were correct. Nate Diaz didn't intentionally take this. We've proven that it came from a very, very low level contaminant of a supplement.
So I know that Nate isn't the biggest wordsmith sometimes, but in his communication, but that statement he posted, the way it sounded, it was like almost like he was being told to cover things up. Like, don't say anything. Keep your mouth shut while this is all going on. Can you explain, I guess?
I can handle that.
Yeah.
So, as I think you guys are aware, the change in the policy going back over a year ago was give athletes the opportunity to let the process play out before anything public is announced. Because what we learned over the period of time was a number of athletes were immediately branded as cheaters before any information was actually out there. And what we clearly saw coming is exactly what occurred this time around, in that a guy like a Nate Diaz, who in my list I would probably put as the number one least likely athlete on the entire UFC roster to take performance-enhancing drugs. It's so contradictory to his moral fiber as a human being that I couldn't even conceive that this would be the situation he would be in, right? So the idea was, take the time to understand what's going on, because what we also knew and what we were trying to convey to his team, and I don't know what occurred in terms of language between Nate and his team and his lawyer and his manager and all of that stuff. Nobody here ever told Nate, don't comment, don't do this, don't do that. What we said to him was, you have the ability to remain quiet and let this thing play out. We had a very high degree of confidence, which was conveyed to his team multiple times, that by today, we were going to have the results of all the tests and a very good chance we would have the results of all the supplement testing, so that you would then have the ability to completely formulate what was in front of you and say, this is what happened and this is exactly the cause of it. I never cheated. I would never be a cheater. And this establishes exactly what I've said all along. What Nate does or doesn't say, or what he meant to say, I can't speak for Nate. But I'm telling you, that's the context of what occurred. So it might be a better question for him or his team on what he was told.
Yeah.
But I think that a part of him, if I'm guessing, was speculating. I'm speculating completely. My guess is that he felt like he was being told, let the thing play out so we know everything that's happening. And knowing Nate the way I've dealt with him in the past, I think maybe it was too much for him to just handle internally, and he did what he wanted to do.
And again, it would be better to ask Nate this, but just since we don't have access to him right now, you know, the statement, hey, the fight is on, but it wasn't ever a USADA issue or UFC issue. It was Nate saying, I'm not taking this fight because of all this bullshit that's going on right now. So can you, I guess, convey what he said to this point? Or is there any, I mean, is he in now that this statement is out?
Yeah, I have every reason to believe he's in. I mean, what was important to Nate from immediately, before anything he put out there or anything he commented, as it was conveyed to us, was that he be cleared. That was the single most important thing to him. And I think what was telling in his statement that he put out, animated as it was, as Nate usually is, it highlights exactly what I think the evolution of the anti-doping world is starting to show, which is Nate's comment was, I don't cheat, I only take plant-based, vegan, whatever that comment was in its entirety, you guys will know, look it up and know. What he basically had contaminated was exactly what he believed he took, a plant-based, vegan, organic, multivitamin. Period. End of discussion.
I don't think in my 20-year history in anti-doping I've ever seen a case where the evidence so well supported an unintentional contaminated supplement use case.
Yeah.
Everything in this case. I mean, there was two separate bottles actually of this product, each one independently tested positive for just about the exact same level. And again, the scientific calculation of what was in the low level of the product worked out perfectly in terms of what was excreted in his urine.
I asked Hunter this yesterday. So there was a period of time where things were on the WADA ban list and they were banned at all times.
Mm-hmm.
When did we get to this point where it's a threshold?
So, I mean, that's been evolving, you know, over the last probably year or so, as drug testing sensitivity has gotten better and better. And we've started to see these low-level cases. I realized that, hey, this isn't 20 years ago where when you got a call from USADA, you knew, hey, this athlete's doping. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, you look at, you know, our program and the statistics in it, you know, I think just under half either have been definitively proven or indicating of contaminants. And so I'm not here at the UFC to spend, you know, hours and to suspend athletes for, you know, the strict liability provision. I think strict liability 15 to 20 years ago was a legitimate,
right,
you know, take on it. It's not anymore, because we're living in a more and more, and I talked about this in the California stakeholders meeting, we're living in a more and more contaminated world. We've seen cases in the UFC of well water contaminated. We've seen multiple food cases of contamination. We've obviously seen supplements. We've seen legitimate prescription drug contaminant cases. This isn't like, hey, be careful and don't go to the store and buy supplement that says testosterone 4000 on it. You're talking about just living a normal daily life, being right, exposed to these things. I mean, you probably read about people flushing prescription drugs down the toilet. Well, it's getting in our water supply. And as we get closer and closer to more and more sophisticated sensitivity of testing, you're going to see these more and more. And that's why the need for a threshold is evident here. Isn't 20 years ago. We're in the new age of anti-doping. We've got to have that. There needs to be some protection for athletes.
And as Jeff and I have talked a lot about this, as we saw really publicly with John Jones, okay, it was the first real major public case of something that suggested, at least to the public, that this was far more complicated than a strict liability case that historically had been adopted. And what became apparent in the process of going through that case, not only with the Nevada Athletic Commission, California Athletic Commission, New York Athletic Commission, what's interesting about the case is all three of those commissions were directly involved in the John Jones scenario. Mm-hmm. John Jones was supposed to fight in New York, so the commission was apprised of everything that had been occurring with John Jones leading up to that, under the assumption that he was going to compete in New York. They needed to be aware of what was going on, and they needed a level of comfort. Kim, Andy, and Bob Bennett, all three of them, had the ability to get ahead of this because of John, to see kind of what was going on. And I think that as Jeff and I went through the Jones case, and I went through the arbitration with John and the whole thing, it was fascinating me to see where this thing was headed in terms of the sophistication of the scientific evolution of the testing process, and how to be a WADA-accredited lab, you only needed to test to 2 nanograms, and now you have reported cases down to a picogram, a single picogram. And as far as I know, the WADA threshold in terms of what labs are required to test down to hasn't changed past 2 nanograms today.
2 nanograms. So that's the technical document that WADA says. If you want to be a WADA-accredited laboratory, you have to detect a SARM at 2 nanograms. That's the requirement. Well, these labs are like, it's an arms race. And they're like, well, we can detect down to 100 picograms. Now they're detecting down to a single picogram, where the WADA technical document says all you have to do is 2 nanograms. I mean, is it good and given information? Can they catch someone who was, you know, doping 6 months ago? It's still floating around their system, maybe, but more likely than not, you're just picking up, you know, all these environmental contaminants.
I'm speaking to you guys as friends too. This was my nightmare scenario as I was dealing with John. This literally was what I was calling Jeff and saying, like,
I can attest to that. Like, you said it once, you said it 100 times.
I started waking up at night, literally, like, this is bordering an immoral issue for me, where I feel like we now know what clearly is happening. What are we going to do? Because, listen, as an attorney, there's certain professions where your judgment and your reputation are the only thing that matter to you, right? It's the only thing that matters. If you lose that, it's over, as far as I'm concerned. And I kept saying to Jeff, like, if we don't figure this out, if we don't do this, we're going to have a situation. My nightmare scenario, I used to say this, was I'm going to get a call that Conor McGregor, Nate Diaz, these guys that I know because I know them in and out, would never in a million years do this, are going to find themselves. They're going to be branded a cheater, and that will impact not only their career, but their legacy. That is the single worst thing, in my opinion, that you could do to somebody, in particularly as a fighter in this profession. Your legacy is what you do this for at the end of the day. The money's great and everything else is great. You do this for your legacy. And I don't want us to ever be a part of anything that negatively affects someone's legacy, who did something unintentionally, who did nothing wrong. Nate did nothing wrong. Nate is not a cheater.
So Nate did nothing wrong. Nate is not a cheater. You can't say it much more clearly than that. And now we'll talk about it with the two young men I welcomed into my room just briefly ago. I mentioned them earlier. It is cold coffee in the house.
Slightly warmed up since being in this non-cold hotel room.
It is not a meat locker like you like to keep your hotel room, sir. And the young Mike Bond has made his way in as well. The short trip down from Toronto, Canada, treating you okay so far.
Yeah, not too bad. A little warmer than Toronto right now, so I'll take it.
I dig it. All right, one funny part of the equation that I did leave out of that story of our Friday night, the UFC 244 fight week kicking off early was, I was not the only one from MMA Junkie who was summoned to come down to the UFC office, so was Cold Coffee. And he wasn't pleased about it, I can tell. I know Cold Coffee well enough. I could hear the words on the phone. I could the tone. It was very subtle. It was very subtle.
Well, plus, I was the backup guy for Bellator. So I was on watching Bellator at any moment, like, Matty could have been like, can you handle this? And I'd be like, okay, because that's what I was supposed to do.
Right.
So anything I had to leave was just like, are you fucking serious? This better be good.
So he rushed down there without knowing what was going on, got his gear set up, was all ready, and that's when we found out there was going to be no video, as I mentioned, at which point Cold Coffee just turned around and went home.
That sucked. Luckily, I mean, at that point of the day, there's no traffic or whatever, but you know me, I always fucking bitch about having to go to the south side of town. So the fact of rushing, dropping everything, and then packing up, grabbing gear, and then going down there just to get told, sorry, no video. I'm like, why am I here?
Bit of a heartbreak for sure. All right, well, listen, I want to kind of get your guys' take because this is a fluid situation. Of course, y'all weren't in the room, but you've definitely all covered it all and been a part of it. I'm having trouble knowing what the right thing to do is, and I want to hear if you guys have an opinion on what's right because, you know, they changed the policy. Before, remember, we rolled out this USADA policy, and it was, listen, when there's a problem with something, we're going to announce it, and then we'll work through it, right? And then people complained, and I get the complaints, right? The whole thing of what happens when you make a claim on page one, and then you make a retraction, you know, on page 10. Everybody remembers the initial claim. So-and-so is guilty. And then you come back 6 months later, and they're like, oh, no, by the way, he's not really guilty. Totally
damage
clean.
Is done.
Yeah, damage is done, as you said. So I understand why they changed the policy, right? But now that we're in this policy of, well, listen, we don't say anything unless they want to say something, and it feels like it's not as transparent as it should be. So it feels kind of shady to me. And so I don't know. Like I can't figure out which one is right, because I feel like you're damned if you do and damned if you don't.
Yeah, I don't think there's a perfect answer. I mean, like, I know it'd be nice to sit here and make some like eloquent argument about like the positive and negatives of each situation, blah blah blah. I mean, there is positives and negatives to each situation. I just don't know which is more meaningful or which direction we need to go. I mean, they've kind of tried both avenues, and there's clearly been, you know, upside to both, downside to both. I kind of preferred it the old way, where they're a little more upfront about it and they had announced the failure at first, and then we'd have to, you know, figure out the situation. I don't know. It's just tough because, like, you look at some of these people who have been exonerated from tainted supplements, like Yoel Romero, even after winning a case suing the company that tainted his supplement, people still call him a cheater. They say he's on steroids, et cetera, et cetera. So, like, you're kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't, and then they hold it till after the fact, and you're like, oh, like, you know, what actually went on here? How long have they been discussing this? Like, I just don't know what the solution is.
I don't either, man. I can't figure it out, and I just, because you don't want to stain somebody's reputation like that. But at the same time, the other thing I definitely do know is we heard Jeff Nowitzki there talking about the policy, the USADA policy is evolving, and now we've instituted these thresholds. And to me, what we heard there all makes sense. It's all logical, right? The thresholds are fine. The testing is getting so good now. It's almost too good, you know? So it all makes sense. But again, announce it before something happens. Don't announce it after the fact. And I know, I mean, we had mentioned on the road show, they're talking about releasing new USADA policies, and I think they're basically already working under the new policies. They just haven't released them all yet. But that, to me, again, in the effort of transparency, it makes it feel like we're making it up as we go along. And, and I think with
it certainly feels like they're making it up as they're going along.
Right, which is cool. I mean, it does need to be adapted. But if you announce something up front and then it affects a case, you go, well, hey, man, they said those were the rules. I knew this was the rules. But when you're announcing new rules as a case is unfolding, that to me, even if you're acting on the up and up, and I trust Jeff Nowitzki, I do. I know some people may say whatever. I believe he's on the up and up.
The golden snitch.
I believe he's on the up and up. But when you're announcing it as something's happening, it just feels to me like it's, like again, like you're making it up as you go along.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, the fact that they're still adapting it and changing policies and, you know, and just does make it feel like they are still figuring it out, and I get that. But, I mean, I like the idea of the transparency of initially claiming that there's something. I wonder if there's a way that they can even if they feel like they just need to release something, they can just say, hey, there's a possible violation that USADA is reporting, you know, dating back to X event or whatever. Mm-hmm. Name will not be notified until, you know, the whatever testing. If they're saying there's a threshold, I think that there could still be you know, some sort of notice of what's
that's
going on, but
like
without actually
revealing
the name until they know for sure that the actual testing is done. That way people can say, okay, USADA wasn't holding the information. They can get the little bit out there, and it protects whoever's out there.
That's interesting.
Until the final spot. I mean,
kind of like that. So if it's somebody on a card, you could say, well, I mean, granted, I guess maybe that would cast doubt on 24 people
right.
or whatever.
But yeah.
I mean,
everyone's on steroids,
right? But if it's not an event, I mean, I'm sure you could just say, listen, an undisclosed UFC fighter has been alerted.
That's the thing; they don't even really have to give the event. But if you want to get as close as you probably can without saying on the co-main event, or on the main card or something, and if you want to specify when it is, because by doing that, you sort of set up a time frame of the athletes that have been there, how slow USADA's test processing is happening. Because if they say it's an event that happened 6 months ago, why are we still finding out about it now?
Right? You could give it like a case number that you can refer back to. Hey, what happened to case 1572 that was 17 months ago that you never said anything about?
And then they can say, well, it came back that the testing didn't whatever, and so we decided to not pursue anything along those lines or something. There's just got to be a way.
The genius continues, my man.
That's right.
As of late, you've been on it.
I think it would be painful for us as journalists because I feel like every time that one goes, we're searching through 600 fighters on the roster and which one it could be. And like, I feel like that would be absolute hell on that perspective because I feel like it would be our obligation to try to dig in and find some more information.
But figure we have that same machine that is on the other side of when they actually do give a name, we have all these outlets now that are like, okay, we must crank out 3 stories on said person. Whereas by doing that, we are in a sense digging the grave for the athlete, and it makes it a lot harder for an athlete to, exonerate their name, because even if the story never actually says that this person's dirty or whatever, it's reported or it's whatever, all the sort of phrasing that I think people are just like, oh, okay, well, now he's got to go extra hard to clear his name because people are already out there. I saw it on the internet. I saw his name or whatever. I mean, I like the fact that they're saying that something happens. But now the fact that they are going out and they're saying, okay, well, we're doing it, but they're pulling back after the fact and saying thresholds and changing it after the fact. If you're going to be wishy-washy and do it, don't bring somebody down to some point like what happened in this case where – you know, you got a guy that clearly, outside of weed, is not actively trying to put anything in his body,
right.
So they just got to fix the process. There's got to be a fine line. If they could find a way that, everybody's sort of happy where they're giving some information but not ruining somebody and making somebody – because then at that point, it's the guilty until proven innocent as soon as their name's put in out
there. They stop short of showing us the label because they can't – they can't identify the product because you know, there's legal implications there, and Nate may want to sue just like Yoel Romero.
He knows you want to protect the fucking product, but you can't protect the fighter.
I know, it's crazy.
That's a little shitty.
But they showed us a portion of the label, so I bet if I worked hard enough, I could figure out what it was. I mean, I just have to look at like thousands of
Whole Foods supplements.
yeah. The next time I'm at Whole Foods, you know. But it was
called Jacked Vegan.
Yeah. It was like, I mean, the label did have things like vegan, non-GMO, tested. It actually said tested on there. You know what I mean? So it was like, I don't know. At the end of the day, I do feel like justice was served here, right? Like, none of us think Nate Diaz is cheating and taking steroids, right? Yeah. I mean, like, I feel like the right thing was done. So when I say that, like, it feels like they're making stuff up as it goes along, I hope that doesn't sound like I'm saying, well, I bet, boy, Nate really dodged a bullet here. You know, I feel like some justice was done. It's just, I want to have a policy that we know is good.
I like the expediency as well. You know, the fact that every fighter and every time something like this happened, the amount of effort and time and push that the UFC put to fix it, I want that spread out upon every athlete, not just your needle movers, 100%. Not just your, hey, this is a main event that's going to happen in 13 days time or 10 days time. You know, like, that's the unfortunate part, that a lot of these fighters have been put through the ringer with no quick resolution, because there doesn't seem to be. There's always an excuse as for the time it takes to get it back, the money, whatever. I mean, as much money as they're pumping in this thing, there should be a whole wing of scientists sitting in a lab coat waiting, like, all right, who's the next one we need to check? Who's the whatever? Are we good? Let's dot all the T's and I's, you know?
Let's get it done.
You know, and you've seen other fighters sort of say that, you know, and it's true. The amount of effort that they went to fix this and fix Nate's name should be the same shit that happens to every
fighter.
That's
true. Like, it can't just be because you're trying to save a main event of a pay-per-view. Everybody should get that same degree of respect and that same degree of expediency.
Right.
You're right.
Everybody. And that should be the fucking prelim guy that starts the UFC fight night card in random whatever locale, or the guy that's headlining Madison Square Gardens in New York City. I mean, like, it should be the same effort.
I don't disagree there. All right, listen, we got a main event. That's how we got to the main event, and we're here. And I got to say, all right, the BMF title, I don't hate it. I like that the UFC's getting a little creative. We got a little tease of it. We just saw a little video that Dana White posted. We're going to see the actual belt tomorrow on Friday. They're going to reveal it. It looks like it's just kind of a modified version of the actual UFC belt, which I think I'm kind of okay with that. I think I'd rather that than some, like, just completely wacky, totally made-up thing or whatever. But the whole concept, I'm kind of okay with it. You know what I mean? Like, I like that the UFC's getting creative and having a little fun. And, you know, I mean, they made the money belt for Floyd and Connor, right? I mean, that didn't actually mean anything. I'm okay with it. But I just want to say this this fight week, it does feel big, man. The amount of media that we're seeing, man, it's Ronda Connor Brock esque levels. This feels like a big fight, and it feels like a fight to me that I think mainstream is kind of paying attention. Not necessarily like the house moms and stuff, but I feel like the general sporting public at least is paying some attention to this.
Yeah, it's like a fight, like a hardcore fight fans fight that's kind of trickled over into the mainstream a little bit, I'd say, just because these guys are in such perfect positions in their career. I mean, I think Nate Diaz's post-Conor McGregor fights just has that allure to him. I mean, he's kind of said it himself, like, any fight I'm involved in is a big fight. It doesn't really matter who it is. So I think he's right about that, and he kind of has that crossover appeal. But Masvidal's just getting there. I mean, it's just happened for him over the past few months. So it's kind of just like perfect timing in that sense. It worked out really well. You have it in New York. All the pieces are there for this to be a major fight, major event. And, you know, it's a rare, I know we have the BMF title, but it's like a rare non-title fight that headlines a pay-per-view. This does not happen very often.
You know, it's funny. So in thinking about this fight, and like I said, Nate Diaz is definitely a star. And it's funny to me. I mean, him and his brother both, the fans are so loyal, like, it's crazy. I mean, they're super fanatic, and you know, those guys don't have they don't necessarily have the best career records. It's not like they're all unbeaten. Not that they haven't had success. I'm not trying to put them down, but it's not like they're, you know, Habib Nurmagomedov out there just reeling off wins. But the loyalty and the passion of their fan base is so big.
Yeah,
and it always honestly kind of a little bit kind of baffled me. Because I get it, like, they're good fighters, you know, but I was like, ah, is it just the weed thing, or is it just the counterculture thing, whatever? But I gotta say, Nate, man, I feel like he's coming around. It doesn't doesn't love media, that's for sure. He doesn't love doing interviews, but I do feel like he's coming around on how to handle them and how to do them, and he's making stuff more approachable. But today, and I think, you know, you were listening to it, Mike, as well, when he was lining out, you know, about the way he fights, you know, and it's so true, and he's talking about how, you know, these wrestlers try to grab hold of him, and he's throwing punches and elbows, and, yeah, you know, he's trying to do
loopholes. Champions find loopholes to be champions and stuff like that, and using, you know, certain tactics in their fights. It's not legitimate fights, you know. He's basically saying there might be other guys that are champions, but I'm the best fighter.
Yeah, and you know what? I was like, yeah, there's something to there's that,
there's
man.
Some truth
you know
in
you're
there.
Getting a, I mean, you know you're getting a scrap. When Nate Diaz gets in there, you know you're getting a scrap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's completely legitimate, and yeah, he gets rewarded with like bonuses and stuff like that for his style. But I mean, the whole that makes me the best fighter and stuff like that. Like, you know, there's grains of truth in like his conspiracy or like mentality that he kind of approaches it, and I think that's true with like almost everything he says.
Yeah,
like there's like little nuggets in there that just make all the sense in the world. And you're like, wow, I could completely understand this, but then it's partially wrapped in some like nonsense as well. So it's like
there's always a little caveat to it.
Yeah,
but I will say this too. The other thing is, I feel that it's refreshing to have a fight that's just about a fight. It's not about I hate you, you hate me. I mean, I get it. Everybody likes a little bad blood. It kind of spices things up, yeah, a little bit. But to me, it's refreshing, man. It's just two dudes that like each other in terms of respect,
yeah,
but they're like, we're going to go have a battle.
But they are still battling for something. And there is the whole, you know, it is here in Madison Square Garden, but the UFC has put a fuck ton of promotion behind this whole BMF thing. They've gotten other organizations. ESPN has talked about the BMF title. You got Rock talking about it. You got the president talking about it. And you know what's crazy is that everybody cleans it up to the BMF, you know. It's the baddest motherfucker title. Like, I want them to say, there's the guys battling for the baddest motherfucker title. Like,
I don't think they're allowed to say that on ESPN.
ESPN isn't, but every other fucking organization, they can say it on whatever, you know. They could say it in their promotions on whatever. I mean, they can do what they want. But, I mean, they're putting a lot of money behind, like what you said. It's a title fight that's not a title fight. And so here we are. We think we're not getting, you know, oh man, it's a pay-per-view that hasn't had a title fight. Well, it kind of does have a title, even though it's not really a title. They're still putting the same promotional sort of push behind it, almost in a sense, a different push, because they had to build this from the ground up, make this something that people care about,
yeah,
you know, and people are talking about it. But I mean, you're right. I think when you talk about Nate's this guy that when you look at him, he's got this diehard following, because unlike what a lot of other fighters come in there, they're trying to wear their suits. They wear the super expensive glasses that look ridiculous, but they in the sharp looking shirts and jackets and stuff that most of us never would afford unless we saved up like months of paychecks or whatever. And I'll never live that lifestyle. So a lot of that doesn't resonate with me. And I look at Nate, the guy that he's dropping Stockton salutes in the fight, you know, and he's throwing down. But he'll come in there in his fucking sweatpants or jeans and like a plain T-shirt with his hat on, you know, just talking like it is. And he goes in there and he just throws down. And I think there's a side of society that resonates with that, because they're just like, that's your blue-collar fighter. I mean, like, I don't think he probably even calls himself like a blue-collar fighter, but he's just that grungy get in there and fight guy. And then you got a lot of other guys, not Jorge in this situation, because he's another guy that I think would resonate with the blue collar society as
on
well.
On the East Coast.
On the East Coast.
Right.
Yeah, but this is like a fight where you don't have two guys going in there trying to act like they're these white collar fancy guys or whatever. It's just two dudes that like to go down. So I think a lot of the populations are like, that's the guy that's closest to like what I am, you know, as opposed to these guys that are super fancy. And we look at them and like, okay, yeah, you look like you're throwing your money around. Congrats on your success.
Right.
These are dudes that, you know, people are just like, that's my dude, just because he talks it, he smokes his weed, and he does his shit. And they're like, wow, that sounds like me, you know.
I dig it.
There's a lot of me's when it comes to, you know, Nate and Jorge, you know. So I think this fight is just one of those ones that I think the everyday person just like, dude, like, it's going to throw down. Nobody has a reason to hate on one of these guys. Like, I mean, lately, I think as the fight's been going, a little diva moments have been kind of coming out. So people might be getting a little tired. But still, when you look at it, it's hard to hate on these guys. You know, they're not going out there and behaving themselves in a way to where the casuals or somebody off to the side would be like, I'm just tired of hearing this dude. I just want to see him get his ass beat.
Yep.
They just want to see a good fight, and that's awesome. They're reaching a different level of people that are off to the sides. You know, they're not giving them a reason to hate on the pretty person or the whatever, but the people just know, like, wow, these two guys look like, if there was a kind of guy I'd walk past on the street that looks like a fight, these are the guys. These are the ones that look like it, you know. You
just continue to drop wisdom. That's so true. And Mike Bond, I got a question for you. It's funny. As you were talking about that Cold Coffee, like the way this is a title fight, but it's not really. Do we know? Have we talked to Fight Metric or whatever? Like, does this count as a title fight? Like, is this part?
Oh, will they put like a – or like, will Tapology put a little belt logo?
I can't give you like the official word, but I'm going to say 99% no.
I would say no, right? Yeah, like, I mean, no, like, no offense, but like, I would hate for this to be like, you know, in championship fights or in title fights.
Right,
I mean,
yeah. Yeah, well, like right? If they land like 700 combined strikes, it's not going to be like, oh, this is a title fight record right. for the UFC. Like, I hope not. That would be really dumb. Yeah, I mean, like, I think we need to find the line between like, oh, this is fun. Like, it's kind of a little gimmick attached to this. Blah, blah, blah. You can make the belt. I almost wish they like.
It's like we made a trophy, basically, right?
Yeah, like, it's fine. You know, you go to, I don't know if there's like the perfect comparison, but you know, you go to like your track meets and you get one thing each, like you get a medal for that night. You don't get it for like your overall, you know, there might be something at the very end, overall standings,
like a season
or something,
championship or whatever.
Yeah, but for this is just kind of like a one-off little trophy.
I think that's right.
And then you move forward with it. Like, you
that's
know.
My recommendation.
I like on that. If I did you see on that belt where it was like one of one?
Yeah.
Really quickly when it did. It was funny when they saw that thing. I'm like, oh, well, there's the reveal. I was like, we don't need to have this whole thing tomorrow, do we?
No. They got to do that little teaser, but
it's going to look a lot better with that right there. They're going to have a nice close up of it than us just sitting somewhere like, look at the belt.
As far as teasers go, like that was like pretty revealing.
They gave a lot of info on that.
Yeah, I don't know what else we're really missing. I guess just the main plate, but to me, honestly, it just looked like a normal UFC belt with some like different engravings.
Well, like it said baddest. I think I know what the rest of it says.
Yeah. And I mean, it's going to be weird. Whoever wins this fight, obviously.
Baddest
like,
mature fighter.
You know, let's say. Let's say Colby Covington meets Kamaru Usman and Jorge Masvidal wins this. We know Colby's saying he's not letting them put the Power Ranger belt on him, as he puts it. So you could have a title fight where these two guys are up on stage. You could have Colby Covington with his old design interim title and then Jorge Masvidal with this fake BMF belt. It would be quite the scene, those two up there, and they're fighting for the welterweight title. Like, it's just, I don't know, it's fine. It's good fun for now. We'll see how this rolls on depending on who wins the fight and everything and how they choose to, like, you know, move forward. I can't really see Nate Diaz like showing up to every media appearance like carrying this belt around and stuff, but who knows. It's but it's some good fun. I mean, it spices up like, and otherwise, you know, what I love about covering the sport is everything's so diverse. It changes week over week and like, things are different, but even then, like, certain things get tedious the way it's kind of set up, and this just adds some fun spice to it.
All right, let's talk about Nate Diaz. Today was media day. We did get a chance to talk to him. He was a good 20 minutes late, 25 minutes late to a 45-minute session, so we didn't know if we were going to get him.
Fair play. I mean, you got 20 solid minutes with him. You don't need to do an hour
that's
of
true. That's true. He
did add that to how long he was late for the weigh-in portion.
That's what I was getting. He
that's
late,
why
the workouts,
we couldn't have the face-offs.
That's right. Well, the workout, he was late yesterday at the workout. I mean, this is – nobody worked out at the workouts. Yeah. I mean, it was
open scrums.
Yeah, it was open scrums.
Yeah, like, it's funny because, you know, part of us were like, we've seen enough of that, and I'm like, okay, that's cool. It's for the fans. It's for the fans. Cool. I get it. You know, he wanted to give it. But didn't I fucking call it what he would say? I even said it the day before. He's going to say, no, I'm not going to work out. I just want to take 2 days. But none of you media guys, none of you guys, you know, I was like, just like what he had said before.
Yep.
But one of the, you heard somebody in the crowd. I don't know if you guys heard it because you were off up to
off
the side.
The stage, yeah.
But somebody was in the back. And I think when it finally got to Kelvin, Kelvin's like, so what do you guys want? What do you want to know? And somebody's like, how about working out? You know, like that's what they were there for. And he's like, oh, no, I'm not going to work out. But even they were like, is nobody going to work out?
I think, I don't know if, I think he tagged you to some dude on Twitter that was like clearly in the crowd or something. He sent maybe like within the time we were there, maybe 6 or 7 tweets being like, you know, in like 20, 30 minute intervals being like, just been sitting here for 30 minutes. They're blasting the music. I can't hear anything. No one shows up and works out. Like, Till's not here, blah, blah, blah. He was just, like, voicing his constant frustrations. I'd be upset, too, man. I mean, you go there, and you're expecting to see something. And I guess, like, you know, if you're one of those few who Jorge Masvidal brought up on stage to do some impromptu body shot sparring, you'll never forget that moment for the rest of your life, probably. Sure. So, like, for those people, it was incredibly special. For everyone else, it kind of sucked.
It was – so that was where the was diva moments that Cole Coffee was referring to. So, all right, listen, we had a chance to speak today. He did show up very, very late. We did hear that he wasn't necessarily in the greatest of moods in terms of wanting to do it. So we tried to lighten the mood, but he kind of cracked a joke as he sat down. You'll hear the joke that he cracks as he sits down, picking up his bottle of water and saying there better not be steroids in this. And then
that was funny.
We tried to get him to lighten up a little bit. We were like, hey, because at the workouts the night before, last night, the crowd did get a little chant going of "fuck you, Sada," which was pretty funny.
Yeah.
And so we definitely brought that up to Nate to get a little smile on his face, and it got a big smile. So, not going to play the whole scrum for you here. I trimmed it down a little bit. I edited it down to I think some of the best parts. Still quite a bit of it because he was on point. But this was Nate Diaz from Media Today earlier today.
There better not be steroids in here.
What'd you think about those "fuck you, Sada" chants yesterday from the crowd?
Funny eye.
Nate, I wonder, I mean, we know this isn't your favorite part of the game. How do you get yourself ready for it? Like, what's your mindset walking into this room, knowing you're going to have to do this, that you'd probably prefer not to?
It's what you guys want me to say. The same shit I've been saying all week already. It's kind of I don't like to see myself repetitively saying the same shit.
But at the same time, look at how many cameras are here, man. I mean, literally everybody in this room wants to talk to you. Do you find that, like, exciting at all or odd? I mean, literally everybody here wants to hear what you have to say.
Yeah, it's cool. It's all good.
In hindsight, are you glad you took, like, those years off? Because if you had to do this every few months, would that not eventually burn you out?
Yeah, this is soul-sucking. It takes your whole life out of you. Yesterday I was exhausted, but that's the name of the game, right? It's cool.
Not that we want you to, but are you going to get to a position where you can tell the UFC, I should do less of this stuff?
No.
Are there any questions regarding this fight that you feel like people haven't asked you about? Are there any areas that you sort of still want to talk about that people haven't spoken to you about already?
No.
Are you just here so you won't get fined?
No, I didn't even know I'd get fined. That's crazy. No, it's all good. This is part of the game, right? It's just I'm ready to be done with all this, weigh in and get to the point.
Have you seen the belt yet? The UFC giving you a sneak? What are you expecting from the belt?
I don't know.
Yeah. Did you have any input in the design?
No, I don't care. It should be, I hope it looks cool.
Do you care about The Rock being there at all and wrapping it around your legs?
The Rock's coming to put the on the winner, huh? That's pretty cool. That's a big deal, right? That's cool.
Are you a fan of The Rock?
I'm a fan of The Rock, for sure.
How do you feel like just Dana doesn't want to put a belt on you?
It would be cool as fuck if Mike Tyson was here, because wasn't that the baddest motherfucker in the game, the baddest motherfucker on the planet or something like that? That would be cool, too.
Before you came along, who was the baddest motherfucker in the UFC?
Nick Diaz, come on.
Did you see Conor McGregor says that he wants to fight the winner of this fight, and does that interest you at all?
I don't know what's next, man. I'm going to do what I'm going to do, and we'll see what's going to happen in the future, you know? Like they said, like I heard before, when the stars line up, I don't know what's next. I'm going to try to make this fight happen the way it's supposed to happen, and then we'll go from there.
Do you know when would be next? I mean, like, this was a quick turnaround for you. I mean, do you think you'd want to fight quick again, or do you want to take some time
off?
That's
just what I said last time. I'll take forever off, or I'll get back to it if everybody comes correct, you know? The only reason we've had problems in the past is because... The only reason why there was any problem in the past is because, you know, you better treat me like it's supposed to be, you know what I'm saying? I've been in this game forever doing my thing, and regardless of outcome, I'm coming back my next fight stronger and better anyway, so.
Could you not fight again, like financially? Could you be, like, done and live okay?
I don't ever have to fight again. I didn't have to fight a long time ago, but what am I going to do? I got all kind of stuff going on, but... But
So do you still love the fighting part? I mean, I know you hate this part, but do you love, I mean, I know the fighting, you've always had kind of a love-hate relationship with it, but do you still enjoy getting in there in the competition, or do you hate even that?
No, yeah, I don't like not fighting.
Anything else aside from fighting? Like, what could you see yourself doing?
I don't know. All kinds of stuff. But like I said, it's not, I think the best thing for me is, it's weird because like, it's self-destructive fighting and it's self-destructive not fighting. So, Killer Be Kill, like, what I said before it is, can't live with it, can't live without it. I don't want to do this shit at all, but you know what I'm saying? Sitting back watching somebody else do it's not comfortable for me.
It's like the game chose you, basically.
Yeah.
Are you surprised more guys haven't followed your method? I mean, like, you called out Conor, you made this crazy money, you've done it again with Jorge. Are you surprised more fighters don't look at you and think, well, that's obviously the model I should copy?
Yeah, I put out the blueprint for money making the whole time, and these guys up here chasing a belt still like they want to do. You know what I'm saying? It's like, you got your... I pay attention to what's going on, you know what I'm saying? And when I was fighting every other month for so many years, or every couple months for so many years, I only focused and paid attention to how to be the best fighter in the world, you know, like train, and I never had a second to sit back and think about other stuff. So the second I took a year off or 3 years off or something, then everything started coming together, you know what I'm saying? And then my martial arts still started coming together better because I recovered and I wanted to be in it, you know? So everything kind of pieces itself together with time.
That's the thing that we talked about last week. Very few fighters can send out a statement like that and go public with that issue that you're having. What was the thought process? Why did you want to come out with it and kind of control the narrative the way that you did?
This is warfare. For one, they call me, telling me all this shit. They're telling me all this, you're on drugs shit. And I'm like, hold up, no, I'm not on drugs. So fix your test. You know what I'm saying? So I continued taking my supplements, which are whole food supplements. I only eat out the garden, you know what I'm saying? Vegetable only, raw life. Maybe I've trained for fights, and I went on, they don't have them anymore, but I used to eat organic, vegan, raw food. It's like everything's made raw, so you're just straight living on plants. And when I was fighting at 55, it was helping me make the weight. And when I did that, my weight was like going down, right? So I was like, I'm like all the way, and I was at my all-time strongest, you know what I'm saying? And I live like that, like by that code. Like we gotta, you know, strong survive type of shit. Like I don't need no chance. And then when they do that, I'm like, you're fucking up my whole shit, what I believe in. And then, so it's making me lose sleep at night. So I'm like, you know what? This is war, and this ain't fair. You know what I'm saying? I'm not sleeping. The UFC's sleeping. Jorge Masvidal's sleeping. I'm like, how about fuck all of you guys? Ain't no one sleeping. Woo, woo, woo. Yo, fight's up. Now no one can sleep. And I was in bed smiling.
What are you talking about?
So it evened things out a little bit. And it's what's real. And now look at, they flipped their shit, got it together, and there was nothing wrong in the first place. So why'd you guys try to fuck with me to begin with?
If you hadn't sent that statement out, what do you think would happen?
I would have just not came.
What was their
they fixed it.
What was their reaction like when you put that statement out?
They called me back and they're like, we fixing it right now. Fix it then.
What did you think of Jorge Masvidal sort of showing support to you when this whole Usada situation happened? And obviously,
only because he knows and everybody knows. That's the funk that they were talking, you know? It's bullshit. So I expect it, and I would do the same for anybody. I'd be like, even if they were on steroids, I'd be like, do the steroids and let's fight anyway. Because they all been on steroids most of the time anyways.
You've always kind of said this, you know, the phrase that you're all on steroids. Is there anyone or some guys that you look at and think, like, you know, those guys are not on steroids? Because you said you would do the same thing for some of the guys, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of guys not on steroids too, but most, you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't put it past nobody, you know? I know a lot of them. Fucking everybody I'm training with is on the same type of thing I'm on, vegan, triathlon. I got, we're all doing the same thing, and we all live the same mindset. Like, do all the juice you want. I'm still gonna be here when you're done. You know what I'm saying?
Do you think just being mentally able to come back
and stuff ruin the fight game. The weight division, I believe, that you need weight division than the title and stuff, but it's like, you know, George St. Pierre a long time ago was doing he was a real entertaining fighter. Then he's like, I need to win and stay winning, so how do I do that? I gotta grab on, I gotta hold on, I gotta run, I gotta point. And that's how became the whole game. So it's like a loophole into being the best fighter in the world, you know? And it's like, you're gonna loophole me out of it because I'm the best fighter in the world, and I'm training the best, and I'm fighting the best. Cause I have like the most of the night bonus for like, and like fight of the night bonuses and stuff. I know they're acknowledging that, and they're like, this is the best guy in the world. Khabib, I don't think Khabib ever had no fight of the night. I don't remember any of his fights except for that they all were the same fight. And so it's a loophole to being the champion. I'm like, nah, I'm talking about the best fighters in the world are the best fighters in the world. No clock, no time, fight to the finish. Warriors, you know, and that's the fight I called for, and that's the fight that fighter I think I am. And you want a good fight, you're gonna see the baddest motherfuckers fight. You're not gonna see some of these champions fight, and some of the champions, a lot of fighters. I've been saying that. I said a couple times that everybody's whack and stuff like that, and I don't mean to disrespect everybody. A lot of the people are some whack fighters out here. There's a lot of really good fighters, a lot of great fighters, and a lot of people doing a lot of really good things. But it's hard to be like think out like who's the best fighter. It's like, well, I have to sit down and think for a while. You know what I'm saying? Because all I can think is me and my brother, and then poor Amador. Kron Gracie's last fight. Look at that guy, and he's only getting better too. And besides that, you know, I like warriors. I like real fights. And people forget when they go to fight shows. They forget that they think they're going to see a fight like they're going to see with me and Masvidal or any like really good fight. They think they're going to go and see war. People who don't know the sport, and then they come and then they see like a wrestler holding down that, like the whole fight card. Everybody's wrestling or running from each other, poking each other, trying to win point decisions. And that's what people didn't really come there for. And they get there and they're like end up just drinking and talking with all their friends at an event. But it's like just like when you go to a baseball game or some shit, you don't watch a baseball game, you just go and sit there and hang out with your friends.
I only been like one baseball game.
But you know what I'm saying? So but then when you get a real fight, all attention's on the fight, and I believe that's my fight every time. And then there's fights I fought against wrestlers who've grabbed a hold of me and held on, and I'm just like standing up and I'm fighting and I'm telling them fuck you, and they're doing their thing, and then they're getting mad and I'm throwing my hand up and like trying to get them to act, and then all of a sudden the fight's over, and then we got fight of the night, and I go home and watch the fight, and my whole fight I'm punching them in their faces and elbowing them and telling them and antagonizing the fight, and he held on to my waist the whole fight. If you watch what he did the whole fight, he's holding on to my waist, and now I look at him like, man, this motherfucker owes me $65,000 because I just got him fight of the night because he didn't do any part of that. And then how can you just like go on to your next fight like, yeah, fight of the night, like this is what I did. It's like, you didn't do that. That's all me.
So, Nate, you mentioned Khabib, and you guys have some history together. Is that a fight that you're interested in?
No, not interested in that fight at all. I'm done with that. Done.
Is that because you feel like...
I already beat him.
Nate, do you have personal interest in the Conor trilogy? I mean, I think everybody wants to see that. Do you personally, like, business aside...
Whatever is going to happen in the future is going to happen in the future. You know, I'm not... They play me like I was sitting there waiting for that fight forever, but I wasn't. You know what I'm saying? I would have liked it immediately, but when it wasn't immediate, I'm like, well, I'm going to chase you around. I don't give a fuck. It's like... You know what I'm saying? If he wanted some fun and we were going to fight, then we were going to fight. But if it's going to happen, it's going to play out how it's going to play out. I don't know.
All right. right there. He is the one and only Nate Diaz, who I thought, you know, started out kind of standoffish with us, and then by the end I thought he had opened up quite a bit and put on a pretty good scrum, man. I thought he had some good moments in there. So hopefully you enjoyed hearing that. One thing I did like hearing him say, you know, when he was kind of going into the part of not really necessarily always loving to fight, is saying, hey, I don't financially have to fight, man. I had always heard that both him and his brother had been very, very good with their money. They don't live extravagant lifestyles, but it's nice to hear that, you know, hey, I don't ever have to fight again. Like, I'm doing well for myself. That's always good to hear in this profession,
100%.
Especially. So, listen, Nate Diaz is, man, his star remains as bright as ever. Meanwhile, Jorge Masvidal, it's crazy, right? I mean, this guy that's been around forever. I mean, at one point, not that long ago, journeyman, probably not a bad description, right? I mean, a guy that had been around, done everything, but hadn't really got to the highest level. And, man, this year, I mean, we've seen a star develop in front of our eyes, and it's been incredible. I mean, the Darren Till result, what he did there, and then, of course, with Ben Askren, he had the perfect foil with Ben Askren, a guy that I think everybody was waiting to see lose, and then to lose in that fashion. I mean, it's amazing, right? Like, how different is it if Masvidal, like, goes out and just, like, earns a split decision over Askren?
Which would have been a lot more stereotypical of his career up to that point.
Right? You know what I mean? Like, and at that point, I mean, he's not anywhere near this status, right? I mean, a BMF title's not happening if he picks up a split decision over Ben Askren, right?
No, I don't think Nate Diaz is calling him out after beating Anthony Pettis. Like, this whole timeline that we're on just does not sync up in that sense. And yeah, it's just incredible to see what he's done. I mean, the guy who got reverse triangle choked by Toby Yamada and Bellator, like, however long ago, like, submission of the year that year. Then you see this guy in Strikeforce, and, you know, he obviously fought for a title there against Gilbert Melendez, so it didn't go his way. But I just remember him being in the UFC just consistently one of the most frustrating fighters to watch.
Yeah,
like, you're like, this guy clearly is so talented, and when, like, he's doing good, like, it's unreal. He looks so sharp, and even in the fights he loses, you're like, dude, you should have won that. Like, you could have won that. And some of the split decisions he should have won.
Yes.
But, like, fights, you're like, bro, if you just did, like, a little bit more.
Just slow to pull the trigger, right? Like,
yeah.
I often felt in his career he was too comfortable moving backwards, number one, which I don't think judges reward counter-striking 100%. Probably as well as they should.
Yep.
He was too comfortable moving backwards. And there were just times where you're like, dude, if you would just turn up the volume
just a little bit.
A couple more punches.
Yep.
It's crazy. All right, I almost hesitate to go down this road, but since I mentioned Ben Askren, all the talk, right? Ben Askren, Demetrius Johnson, some people say the trade, awful. What do you guys think?
I mean, I'm glad both of them got money out of it and did whatever. But, I mean, in terms of who's getting a better value after it, I mean, I think they're both – I think one's loving what Demetrius is doing for him. And he seems to be the only one from the UFC that's actually winning over in that organization. But in terms of who's getting more of a promotional push and able to sort of play him out and get more big fights, it seems like Askren. But I mean, we're not in the markets of where this one stuff is. Maybe in the markets over there, they look and they see DJ's name on it, and maybe they freak out. Maybe people are like, "Fuck yeah, that's the guy that was destroying it in the UFC." And maybe they're getting a push from it, but People love Askren, and just the way he carries, he plays the game, and he does it right from the get go. DJ, it took a little bit to sort of warm into that role where he would play, he would talk a little bit more, and he would engage with the other fighters. But yeah, in terms of I think more immediate impact value of what he's done for the organization, I think he hands down has done more for the UFC than what
DJ. I saw a lot of people saying, man, what a bust of a trade. Now, look, if you're talking about, like, from a typical trade point of view, like a sporting trade, which, again, it was not a trade, but whatever. That's what everybody calls it, right? If you're looking at it from a typical sporting trade, then you would be like, yeah, absolutely. One championship won the trade because they got the better guy, right? They got the better fighter as far as, you know,
he
results.
He just won a belt. You know, he's doing, like, what they thought they would do.
Totally. But if you're looking at it in terms of business, I think the UFC did better. I mean, no offense to Demetrius Johnson. We saw it from the page views. You know, he doesn't – as great of a fighter as he is, you know, we've had arguments whether or not he's pound-for-pound number one or was at the time. He definitely didn't move the needle in terms of what he did. Now, Askren came in and has lost two consecutive fights now. But, I mean, he helped make Masvidal. We're, this title fight doesn't happen without that knockout. Yeah. So he helped make this happen. So just right there, and we're talking about what a big fight this feels like. Just right there, he won. But then you can do things like look at extending the career of Damian Maia and building that guy up one more. I mean, there's little things along the way. So yeah, I think what do you think, Mike?
It's tough to say. I think from the fighter standpoint, I'll go with that one just for now. I think both guys won. Like, I think Demetrius Johnson didn't want to be in the UFC anymore. I think he was kind of sick of it. It worked out just that, he dropped the title in a close fight. It wasn't like a massively deflating loss in terms of his value, and then the timing worked out. And then Ben Askren got it. I'm hesitant to say got exactly what he wanted, because I'm sure he didn't want to get flying knocked out in 5 seconds. But he got, his whole thing was, I want to fight the best guys. I want to know how good I really am at this sport. And he got to find out that he lies, maybe somewhere between the 10 and 7 or the 10 and 7, 15 range as a welterweight in the world.
Yeah.
Something like that. But from the organization, yeah, I think there's all the points you guys have made are extremely salient. We wouldn't have this fight here if it wasn't for him with Jorge Masvidal. That was all part of his story. One seems to be reveling in having Demetrius Johnson, the martial artist, over there in their organization. So it's all it's fine.
It's positive all the way around. As you said, though, the fighters won. I think both organizations got what they want. I think it was a positive all the way around.
Yeah.
I just saw the reaction after that where people were like, oh, that trade, what a bust
of course,
that was.
Yeah. Yeah. There doesn't need to be a winner or a loser. I think it's all sides came out beneficial, I think, for the most part. I'm reluctant to find, a negative, unless you're Ben Askren, losing fights.
Right. And even though he lost, though, I mean, I'm sure he's making the money that he wants That's to be true. Getting. But what also feels like is Ben's getting the fights he wants. I don't get the feel that it's like, okay, hey, you're signed into the organization. Now you just got to work your way up, and you got to fight nobody's until you earn your way. He's had good names that he's fought the entire time that he's been in the organization.
Yep.
And I feel like he's in control. I don't feel like he's just getting thrown guys and he's like, oh, now I got to deal with this. And I think that's what he wanted. He came over. He's getting the money that he wants. He's in the organization that he wants to fight now. And he's fighting the guys that he wants to.
Yep.
So I think he's happy. I mean, and he's came in, and I think part of it, his close relation with some of the other fighters as well, has immediately placed him on many more people's radar. As soon as he came in the organization, even the people that didn't really know who he was immediately started thinking wow, if he's hanging with these guys, he must be somebody, And then you hear him talk, and then they're like, wow, this guy's funny, and he just sold himself even higher. So I think they both did really, really good. I think DJ loves the fact that he has a whole new pool of people that he's fighting. I think the markets that he's fighting
doesn't have to try to fake trash talk any of that.
And he's worked and it's worked perfectly for him. I mean, he's getting tough fights. I think they absolutely adore him because a lot of the fans that are watching it understand all the fine minutia that he's out there doing, and they respect it. And I think that's all DJ ever wanted, is to be respected as a martial artist and to be respected as a fighter, get paid the money that he wants to get paid, and just have his career keep moving forward, and he's done that.
Yeah, I agree.
So I'm happy for him.
All right, let's talk about Jorge Masvidal. We said, man, his star. We watched it, man. We watched it emerge this year. We've been commenting about it all along the way, how we've seen, oh, my God, he's just right. He's a great fighter. He has the ability, and he's put on two epic performances back-to-back. He's cool, right? I mean, it's easy to say. The dude's cool, right? Yeah. I mean, the way he speaks, the way he looks, man, he carries himself.
Sweater.
Yeah.
His sweater was the coolest thing. That was the highlight
of
my day.
He does his thing, right? All right, but this week has been a little bit weird, all right? Because I think he's been – this year, he has nailed everything all along the way. Now, you touched on it, Mike Bond, bringing the guys up on stage yesterday at the open workouts – to box with each other. Now, granted, he made them do body shots only. That was a poorly conceived idea that could have ended horribly wrong. And you said it, hey, for these people, they're never going to forget that. And that's true.
Yeah.
But at one point, one guy almost fell off the stage. Now, it wasn't really that close. Yeah. But it was close.
No, because guys started throwing, and the last group that was up there, not the ones that were
one guy
cut off,
was
the one
really
right
jumpy.
Before.
Yeah, because they were progressing. Yeah.
They were starting to go.
I don't know if we're going to do this. And as it kept going, it was people like, oh, let me up there. I'll fuck them up.
Oh, yeah. There's a couple guys that looked like they were swinging for the face.
Yes.
And so I was like, oh, okay, this is going to be bad. All it takes is one bad cookie to go up there and say, oh, yeah, I'm going to body shot and just fucking cold cock somebody. Then what do you do when somebody's knocked out, picking themselves up, and then there's the UFC staff like, what did we just allow happen? And as it went on and on, I kept looking over. I'm like, why haven't they stopped
this
yet?
Well, Lene tried to stop it, right? Lene, the head of PR, she tried to stop it. And he basically was like,
they had to call in the brute force and get
Reed Harris. The silverback had to come in and just he like had to wave it off.
Find somebody that he finally respected enough to like say, okay, if he's asking me, maybe I should probably stop. But that was rough. I mean, like, and it's fun, and I think a lot of people can think about, oh, no, it's just people having fun. But really, the liabilities of what could have happened.
Lawsuits could have happened.
Could have been really, really bad. And people could have really got hurt up there.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I think part of when you go, and I think a lot of people, when you want to train
sound like
and
old
spar.
Old fuddy-duddies or
no,
whatever.
But think about it. It's true.
Liability for the company.
And even when you spar, you want to, when you're actually going to spar with someone, you have to have trust in what's going on, who you're actually sparring with.
Right.
They were lucky in the fact that most people there actually followed the rules, but there was no guarantee, and there was nobody knew, you know, anybody from their brother to anybody. Like, they were just all strangers. So all it took is one person to just be like, yeah, I'm going to hit him in the stomach. I'm going to fuck this motherfucker up.
Train,
you know,
boxing full time.
There was
gotcha.
There were some people that were like, I got something to show you. I'm a boxer. I got some whore. I got something to show you. And he was just like, he's like, okay, buddy. Okay.
That last group, Reed waved it off pretty quick, that last group. But like that one dude came out and threw he was swinging for the fences.
There was
like
a couple,
you said, dude.
He was throwing headshots.
Yeah, he was throwing headshots.
Oh, dude. So I thought that was a bit of a misstep, but I get it. He's just trying to have fun. And we know he never works out. He does like Q&As and that sort of thing. So that was, I think he was trying to have fun, but that was a bit of a misstep. Then today was interesting. So it was media day. Nate was late. We kind of expected that, but he did show up. He showed up about halfway through the session and he showed up. So then we're waiting for face-offs, and the face-offs are taking forever. And we're finding out that Masvidal is not in the building. You know, he's actually staying somewhere else. He's not at the host hotel. He's got his own place. And he's not there. He's stuck in traffic. And I understand. I mean, there is New York traffic, dude. There's no question about it. But very, very late. Late enough that we didn't get a stare down. And now, I go back and forth on this because, right, we saw their stare down in New York. Like, Masvidal doesn't do, like, big stare downs anyway, right? Like, he usually just puts his hands behind his back and it's pretty casual. But I don't know. It's like that last little, you know, people like that, right? I mean, you like to see it. You like the imagery. You like the video. I mean, people
and you don't
like
know what Diaz
it.
Is going to do. Diaz is kind of an iffy factor when it comes to stare downs. Remember, even when Cowboy came in with the hat.
Oh, yeah.
He was like,
man.
Oh, and he flipped the hat
off. That was
off. A classic. I mean, there was just like,
yeah,
you never
Connor
know.
Stuff where there was some good ones there during those fights.
Yeah, I mean, like, he's a question mark. You don't know what he's going to do. If he's a cool character and he's like, whatever, he's just going to stand up there and he's just going to, you know, get that little chin where he puts his chin up a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, he's got the hands up and stuff. But you never know on something like this, you know.
I know, and you want to see that, man.
Wanted
I like
see.
That stuff.
It would have been fun because then there's that anticipation. It's like, oh, because if he does something, George is going to pop off.
Yeah.
And then we're going to have some shit. Then that would have been fun, that whole anticipation of what could happen.
That's it.
That's what we want.
So we didn't get it. We'll still get it at the face-offs at the ceremonial weigh-ins. I mean, we're still going to get it the night before, but I don't know,
but it wasn't
man.
Just their face-off that we missed. Somebody else wasn't there as well.
Oh, how about that? Darren Till showing up late, man. It's been an adventure for him to get a visa. So, yeah, we didn't get our main or
co-main.
those
are the first two ones that we put out.
That's
when it comes to video, those are the priorities.
The main
and then
the
it was
co-main.
Just like, okay, we just stood here for a fucking hour for what? I mean, no offense to the other guys in the car, but it's like
let Chance run country face off.
That's what everybody's calling for. Listen, disrespecting Chance. I'm going to tell him about that. All right, but we
not
did finally get Masvidal. He did sit down. We knew that he was probably going to be a bit testy as well. I asked him right off the bat, hey, why are you super late? And he explained it, and he was very honest. He admitted that he kind of didn't even want to be there. But I'll say this, Masvidal ended up staying for about 35 minutes, man. The scrum that we did, and the whole thing. If you want to watch the whole thing, it's on YouTube. We've got it up there on the MMA Junkie YouTube. And he was, like I said,
you should subscribe. If you haven't already, y'all motherfuckers need to subscribe to our channel.
That's right. So first, you need to make sure you subscribe to the Roadshow.
Make sure
you're logged into.
Then right after that, into our YouTube.
You're
and
logged
subscribe.
Into podcasts if you're an Apple user. No longer
Apple
iTunes.
Podcasts.
Make sure you're an Apple Podcast. Make sure you subscribe. Make sure you rate us if you can. Leave some feedback. We love the feedback. Leave us that if you can. But then go straight over to the MMA Junkie YouTube.
Over.
Do that. And then after that, go to patreon.com/the MMA Roadshow. Support the show there. Show us the love. I mean,
yes,
you know, just help us out a little bit. We're trying to do things. So
we've got a couple recent patrons where if I was better, I would pull the names up, and I will try to look them up maybe before this podcast opens.
We'll reach out to them personally.
Yeah, certainly. You've been good about reading there. That's why I've been forwarding you all those emails so you can send something. So thank you for the new people. So somebody is paying attention to this.
We really do
appreciate it. If you're still feeling generous after all that, I do have a Venmo account.
Nope. Sorry, guys. Don't worry about that.
Sound guy garble there, but we should push the YouTube. I mean, like, our YouTube has been slowly growing on its own, and it'd be good to get some more interaction. I've been trying to play around and do some different little things there, and then once we build that up, then I'll build up the road show YouTube. But I don't want to task our listeners with too much. You know, that's a lot. Go to podcast, do that shit. You go to the road show and do that, and then the Patreon. You know, I don't want to dump too much.
No, not too much right now. We'll get there. But we'll appreciate it.
Baby steps.
We appreciate it. All right, listen.
Baby steps.
We did have a chance to sit down and speak with Jorge Masvidal. Like I said, I trimmed this down quite a bit. I know you don't want to hear the whole thing. If you do want to watch the whole thing, it is on the YouTube, as we said. If not, just hear the highlights right here. There are some pretty intense moments. So this was Game Bread.
Hello, everybody.
What's the rundown of the day, man? We're expecting you about an hour ago. What happened that you couldn't be here?
If you find Abraham Kawa, tell him thank you so much, because I'm only here because of him.
Why did you not want to be here?
Man, tell you the truth, I never want to do these things, bro. I just want to fucking always train and compete and fight and be by myself. I've been trying to go to Central Park forever and just go by myself and do what I've always done, visualize and meditate and be by myself. And I've done every single thing they said, you know. They kind of forget that I have to train late because the fight is late and I have to wake up early and this and that. And I don't want to complain or nothing, but I don't know. So what am I going to get? What question of you guys is going to be different from yesterday or the day before? What's going to be different?
Nothing.
Not a damn thing, you know? So why keep doing this repetitiveness? I don't know, you know? I get it. You know, I got to show up and do things, but I had things to do today in the morning. I got to make weight tomorrow. I've never missed weight. And I got, you know what's more important than all of this? It's a fight on Saturday. And having my head right, making sure that I perform, you know? So I had to do a couple things today in the morning to make sure that Saturday, Friday, my weight is good and Saturday is good. So, you know, this is going to hurt a lot of you guys' feelings. This is like third, second in the list. First thing is fighting. Whatever it takes for me to fight is the first thing for me always, you know? There's other guys that live for this shit. And, you know, whatever. Kudos to them if that's what they got into it for. I got into it so I could fight and shit like that. And coming back into the sport, though, I knew I had to dominate this area of talking and interviews and fighting if I wanted to get the big paycheck. So I try to do as much as I can, but fighting comes first, you know, and I had shit to do in the morning.
I think the one thing we missed was we wanted to see the face-off. That's what we didn't get to see today. We wanted to see you guys together, get that.
They could Photoshop that thing together. And plus, I'm not good at fucking the media days. Didn't Ben Askren beat me like on two fucking, one of these things called press conferences or whatever? I care less about those things, man. I just want to fight, man.
Jorge, you said that you're not a West Coast gangster, you're a Miami dude. What's the difference between the two?
You're going to find out Saturday, my brother.
There's other people in this sport that make their whole shtick about the president, and yet he's going to come watch you fight and not them fight.
You said it yourself, man. I think real recognized, real, no matter what your views are on Trump as a president, the guy's a bad motherfucker, man. The money that he's made, the obstacles that he's conquered, he's a bad motherfucker in his own way, you know? No matter what your political views are. And who's he coming to see? It's not that cocksucker with the MAGA hat talking about Trump this, Trump that, and he don't know shit about politics. And I'm not going to sit here and talk about politics or act like I know about it, but I ain't going to try to fucking sell people that I know about politics. That motherfucker can't even spell the nation's capital. Inbred ass retard.
Would you like to have Trump put the belt on you other than the rock?
That'd be cool too, you know. Trump's a cool motherfucker, you know. I don't want to get too much into politics, so, you know, a lot of my Latin community might be upset at me, you know. So I'm not going to dabble into politics right now, my brother.
Do you wish you could have seen that other guy's reaction when it's announced that Trump was coming to this fight?
Oh, I know his reaction and his ghostwriter's reaction, because it's a small world. I know exactly how much teeth shaving they did when they actually found out how cringy they got, you know.
I know you don't like talking about him, but the fans asked you about Kobe yesterday, and you said something. What did you say? Because we couldn't hear you on stage.
That the universe is going to correct that mistake via me. Our time will come. I'll dictate when. And then I will. A lot of people said, you included, I think, that what I did to Ben was a little uncalled for. No, it wasn't. What I'm going to do to Kobe is going to be uncalled for. And I can put my life on that, man.
Well, speaking of which, what's the atmosphere like getting to team now? Because it seems like
he sees me, security comes, coaches grab him, they put him away, they got me in a training separate room. He doesn't say a word to me. I fuck with him all the time because I'm the type of guy, if you say something right now, whenever I see you, I'm going to hold you to that. It's just who I've been since I was a kid till right now. I don't have to prove it. Everybody knows. At any given moment, I see my bully, the guy that's trying to conquer me. We're going to find out. And if we could fight every time that we came across each other, we would. He knows it. That's why he runs at me. That's why he runs away from me. That's why I go where he eats at and wait for him. He doesn't eat at these places no more. Because I'm going there to eat. And this little bitch is nowhere to be seen. And these are places that he constantly used to eat at. He knows that. Then I know. So I've been at these places just wanting to have a talk with a man to man. This coward has not gone to eat at these places. I heard he's only doing Uber Eats, you know? Not like I'm assaulting him or nothing. That's not me. Just want to talk to a man to man, you know? Just ask him some questions, you know, man to boy, you know? Be like, why after I let you sleep in my couch? You ate off my food. I helped you get on MMA Junk. I helped you get on Ariel Helwani, BJPenn.com, all these things. Why would you just turn on me just for a Facebook like? Just for some, are you that much of a bitch? And I'm that much of an idiot. It's truly the mistake is on me. Because I'm the fucker that let him, you know? He also burnt John Jones. And John Jones back then was sending little messages to Abraham and stuff like, tell George you don't trust that dude. He's another guy, you know? And I was kind of like, there's three sides to every story. Yours, theirs, and the truth. So I didn't really, you know, I was like, eh, I didn't. It was in the early stages. Then he also burnt my boy Woodley, which is one of the few stand-up dudes in the sport that is a true fucking friend. Doesn't know nobody money in the sport. That's one thing. A lot of fighters, 50% of them, 40% of them, owe money to trainers, coaches, people that help them get to that moment. I can't relate with those people. That to me, you're a fucking cockroach. Pop, you know, somebody helped you. Somebody gave you knowledge and wisdom to get to the next level, and you don't pay back by just giving them a little bit of money, you know, whatever the fair percentage is. And Kobe fits in that fucking same cowardice. He ripped off two coaches that I actually introduced him to. So I feel like the asshole because the credit's on me. It's on my credit that he did these things, you know. So extra fuck that guy, you know.
I think a lot of us here have like fallen out with like best friends. Does that like hurt you? I mean, maybe that's a bit soft.
It doesn't hurt me at all. It hurts me that I was so fucking stupid and naive to let this individual anywhere near my family, friends, coaches, let him sleep on my fucking couch for about a year. And all this that I'm saying is actually, you can see it online, or you could ask people at American Top Team. So that's what hurts me, that I was that stupid and naive.
Is there an argument that he shouldn't be at that gym anymore? It's not just you, it's Dustin, it's Johanna. But is there ever an argument where you need to say to Dan, like, why you let this man still
My only argument with Dan and the company is we're both men. We both know how to defend ourselves, right? But when I see him and he sees me, let's just handle it, you know? And let it be what it is, you know, because that is my city, and I'm very polite to him because in the snap of the fingers, I could have five cars packed to the teeth with individuals to make sure he never comes back. I don't do that. I want to handle it man to man. He won't give me that. I just really want to talk to him and tell him, what is your fucking problem? He won't do that. He's a coward. Just like Woodley said, he hides in corners when he was at the gym. That's who he does. But when this is around and there's a couple security guards behind him, man, that dude is a fucking pit bull all of a sudden, huh? And I can't relate with that shit, man, you know?
So if Usman beats him in December, would you want Usman in the title, or would you want him and the personal beef?
Like you said, personal's personal, business is business, you know? You see how I handle personal dudes. I forgot that guy's name from England. You see how I handle personal dudes. Business is business, you know? When it's business, it's the biggest paychecks, it's the biggest belts. I can give a fuck less from my personal side to bring it to my business. There's a lot of guys from where I'm from still trying to fight me and shit like that. I'm not going to bring him into my biggest stage. I'll take care of him in the parking lot somewhere, you know? Because at the end of the day, I love the fight, so I'll give you that. But he's not going to be on stage with me sharing it if he doesn't deserve it, you know?
It might be bigger money than a title fight, though. I think more people might pay to see you and Kobe than they would you and Conor.
Tell you truth, I'm the ticket at 170. Wherever I fight, I make that fight huge. I make that fight big, you know?
You see that McGregor says he wants to fight the winner of this fight. Like, let's say that's on the table, the title's on the table. Which one is the way you go? Because you could defend this BMF title with a McGregor fight, and that would be probably bigger than an Usman fight.
Conor's done amazing things. And I always give him, not always, but I try to give credit to him. He's got two belts. He's got the fastest knockout with the title. He's done a lot of great things, you know. But as of late, he hasn't competed in a while. And I'm just hearing things. I'm not seeing it, you know. If he comes back and fights me, and fights whoever he fights and wins, and wants to fight me, of course I'm going to fight that guy over everybody. Just like I would fight Nate, because Nate's a huge dog, and he also brings in dollars. Conor's the same. He's a fighter. He might not be the toughest guy, but he's a hell of a fighter, and he brings in millions of dollars. So, of course, I'm going to fight that guy over all these other bums. It's a no-brainer, man. But is he fighting? I don't know, you know?
Are you excited? After the Nick Diaz fight disappeared on you, is it just like, can you believe your luck that you actually got Nate, you got one of the two?
Part of me, yeah. Part of me, no. Because I always thought for a while when I was coming up, man, I'm going to fight Nate at some point. And then I started thinking, if I might not materialize, I'll just strike with you in the UFC. When we're both in the UFC, different weights. It's always a fight I wanted personally because I like the dude's style. I like how he carries himself. I like how he fights, you know. So I personally wanted a personal level. But I started thinking it might not happen, you know. And then thank God it's happening now.
Okay, how much of this fight is about legacy for you? Just going down in history as the baddest man in the UFC?
Oh, it's all legacy. It's all heart and drive. I've said it many times, I don't think Nate is the most skilled, but he is one of the biggest dogs the sport has ever seen. And that, right there, to me, says a lot. You know, that's a guy that I want to be. I want to be like, yeah, I beat that guy. You know?
Martin, you said you've got to put him into another orbit. Is that the way to beat him?
A guy like Nate, definitely. You don't want to let that guy hang out at any moment. You might be beating him up for four rounds, you take him down, and he's still gaming, wraps around your neck. You can take his legs off, as we've seen, and the guy's just still coming, you know. So he's literally, the best way to describe him is he's a fighting dog. And fighting dog's the only way to take care of him is to put him down, you know.
All right, so there you go, Jorge Masvidal. He's got Nate Diaz on the mind for sure, but he's definitely got some Colby Covington on his mind as well. Now, he usually goes into media sessions saying, don't ask me about other people. I don't want to talk about other people. But, you know, he had mentioned somebody at the Q&A, the open workouts that became a fan Q&A, had asked him about Colby Covington, and he had a pretty strong quote, but it was tough for us to hear the way the audio was positioned, so, you know, kind of asked him to repeat that. Of course, it was Oscar Willis, our good buddy from the Mac Life, that got him going on the present situation there. Listen, the Covington fight, and Covington's in town. Covington's going to be here, so I'm sure they're making sure to keep those two apart. Man, if the stars can align to make that fight, I think that's going to be a big money fight because Jorge, of course, a big star, and Colby, somebody that everybody loves to hate. Now, I don't know if you know, Kamaru Usman happens to win, you know, if that downplays the importance of the match or whatever, but, man, there's some real rivalry between these two. And, listen, I've heard people say that this is a work or something along those lines. Man, I do not feel that way at all, dude. Like, these two guys, to me, everything seems genuine. And the words that are coming out of Masvidal's mouth, man, he seems fired up to punch a hole in Covington's face.
Yeah. And it's strange because these are the two guys that, you know, we're like, oh, man, we won't fight. We'll never fight. We're buddies. We're whatever. And it's like,
not anymore.
I'm like, was that a dream? Did I really ever hear that? Because it doesn't seem like there's any resounding moments of friendship anywhere left in the carcasses.
I love Masvidal's, I guess you want to call it trash talk, we'll call it trash talk, but you know, like, just it is again going back to like him being cool or whatever, just like him throwing out there like, hey man, I just heard Colby, like, he only gets Uber Eats now because he can't even go to the restaurants where he used to go because, you know, I'm there, you know. And I'm like, it's solid, you know, it's subtle, like, funny. It's clever shit, you know what I mean, where it's not great. Like, maybe it doesn't like have the headline that you need, but it's like just funny talk. Like, you know, if you're talking shit to somebody, it's good.
Yeah.
All right, let's lay it down. Are we feeling good about, you know, after seeing these guys? We haven't seen the weigh-ins yet, of course, but we've been around and we've seen them. Now, these guys aren't going to miss weight, especially at 170. That's not a problem. Are we feeling good about a pick? I mean, I think we're all anticipating. I mean, I think we all agree that either guy could win the fight, right? I mean, these guys both have the capability to win the fight. Either you guys have a good read on this one or feel strongly convicted about it?
No. I don't feel strongly. I mean, for our staff picks, I picked Nate Diaz, but it's one of those ones that by no means am I confident in it. I mean, I've been absolute crap at our picks this year, but that aside, I think, like you said, both guys can win, but I think Nate, the more durable guy of the two, I think he's going to be able to kind of shut down Masvidal with the jab a little bit and avoid a huge one-strike knockout like that, which we've never seen him suffer. Like, the Josh Thompson loss was more an accumulation of damage at that point. Masvidal's definitely capable of that, but I just think, like, five-round fights, 170 against a guy that's not, like, massively, doesn't have all these, like, physical advantages over Nate. Like, I feel like kind of everything's on his side in the sense.
Definitely the later it goes favors Diaz, no question about it, right? I mean, definitely. Mm-hmm. What about you, Kokami?
I'm going to stick with my pick. I picked Masvidal, and I'm pretty confident. I mean, I think that, like you said, I mean, when it comes to hands and you see Nate, he always shows up and surprises you. If he's able to keep that distance and keep those hands popping and keep George, but George isn't I don't think this is the one that's going to be like, okay, just willing to say, okay, I'm just going to sit back and let you sort of dictate this pace. And we've seen even Connor dropped Nate
right.
a couple times. And I think Masvidal, for the most part, outside of Connor, which has a nice, really strong hook, I think Masvidal hits a hell of a lot harder when he's punching and he lands contact. So I think if Nate can get dropped by Connor, I think he certainly can get dropped by Masvidal. It's just a matter of, if he doesn't overshoot and doesn't do something that maybe gets in the ground and then falls to, maybe Nate's submission skills. But I feel pretty confident. But, normally I would use the open workout to see the hands
to kind of
put that in there. But it's going to be two calm and cool guys going in there throwing down. And I agree with you that as it goes on, if there's been a bunch of expending of energy, and it gets to the fifth round, maybe George will be in a little bit of problem or Jorge will be in a little bit of problem. But if it's just a sort of a slow, plodding fight, neither one of those guys is going to be tired by then. I think they'll still have plenty. So we need to have that sort of spark of action going for that to be a worry. George or Jorge, I still always want to call him George. Jorge, I'm like, it's George, right?
We used to call him George all the time. And then he started going more by Jorge.
Yeah.
But then you still have like Joanny and Jacek always calls him Georgie. I mean? So that that sticks
the
in
the tendencies just stick in there. And it's like, I have to work to call him Jorge. But
I'm still okay with calling him George.
Yeah. I mean, it's what we did for so long. When I first was introduced to who he was, it was George, so it's hard to shake that. But I will stick with that pick. I'm not one to want to go throw cash down, but I'm not feeling too bad about that as being my pick. I'd have to think of the fight right now. There is another one I know I wanted to switch on the main card. I'd have to look at the card again to think where it was.
But you felt like
but
you
I was like, oh, maybe it's the Shabazzian Lee one. I think I might have went
Gillespie Lee.
You mean Gillespie Lee? Yeah.
No, that's the one. No, I definitely picked Gillespie. Who's Shabazzian fighting?
Tavares. Have picked that one.
I think I might have picked Tavares, and I think that's the one I was like, oh, shit.
Maybe made a mistake.
I made a mistake on that one.
It's Luke Thompson. That might be one. That might be a tough one too. Luke Wonderboy, I think, is a tough one. All right, look, I'm gonna say this. I'm picking Masvidal as
that's
well.
That's another one.
I'm staying with my pick.
Damn it! You're right.
I'm sticking with Masvidal. But I do feel like, I mean, again, we haven't seen him work out, but I feel like Nate looks good this week, and
he just looks great.
Feels like he's on, and there's not the questions of like, oh, the long layoff. You know what I mean? The quick turnaround, I think, favors him.
Yeah.
So it's gonna be a good fight.
And he's always working out. He's always like running. I mean, like when it comes to like cardio, the dude does his triathlons in his time off. Like, that's a guy you don't have to worry about. When it comes to 5 rounds, 10 rounds, the guy's gonna be fine. And but Jorge looks good too. I mean, but he looks like he still had some weight to drop off. It looked like he's going to – if there's going to be one of the two that's going to have a little bit more of a long night tonight, I think it's going to be him.
I just hope we get. I hope we get a couple rounds at least. I hope we don't get something quick one way or the other. I know that sounds weird, you know what I mean? But I'd like to see some back and forth, some character build, you know, from both of them. But
my question to you, I guess, to flip the script a little bit here: what's the better result for the UFC, having Masvidal win or having Diaz win? I guess let's just assume it's like a nice victory, you know, highlight reel, whatever, just like a good clean win, no controversy attached. What's better for the UFC?
I would say Masvidal winning would be better for them because I believe Masvidal's current like rise is predicated on him continuing to win. I feel like if he loses a little bit, like, whereas I don't think Nate has to win to stay popular, and that trilogy with Conor McGregor is like I said it from the beginning, like those
almost
dudes
makes
could
more
both,
sense if he loses.
Those dudes could both lose five fights in a row, and you put that fight, you know, they're on five fight losing streaks each, and you put them together, and it's going to be gold, right? Yep. So yep. I feel like the better result for the UFC is Masvidal winning.
I think so too, and you're going to get a lot more value out of it because Masvidal more than likely is going to want to fight in the next 3 or 4 months after this. Diaz probably won't want to fight again for another 8 months, 10 months.
And I think,
Masvidal's kind of said it, right? Like, he's trying to capitalize. Like, he realizes, like, oh, man, I finally got to this point, and now I got to capitalize on it.
Yeah, and I think Masvidal versus, obviously, Covington is a massive fight, but even Usman, too. I don't think anyone really cares that much to see Diaz versus Usman or something. Like, maybe Diaz versus Covington, but, like, we've seen that fight with Nate Diaz.
Yeah.
Like, especially at 170, guys who are, you know, wrestling-based, can grapple like that. Like, that's being the bane of his existence and his career at lightweight a lot of times too. So yeah, I think I'd tend to agree. Masvidal, there's more legs behind him winning, and like you said, Nate losing, he can come back from that. He's done it 11 times already, so
that's crazy to say it that way. All right, real quick, we haven't seen Darren Till yet. Now they're gonna do a Darren Till scrum.
Who?
After
that is
sources
him?
Say he has landed.
Sources say he has landed. We're gonna see
who?
We're gonna see a scrum with him after the ceremonial weigh-in. So that'll be the first time we're gonna talk to him. I guess the good news is this is a middleweight fight. Normally we'd probably be freaking out, being like, "This dude
was 170."
Yeah. If it was 170, you'd have to wave the fight out. So I mean, I mean, still, who knows? I mean, he's been looking pretty healthy and pretty big in the media that we've seen. So, you know, maybe this cut's still going to be a problem, which is, I think it's fair that the UFC said, hey, you don't have to do anything, you know, we'll take care of it afterwards. I get it, because he's having to come in and basically make weight, like, what, 16 hours after he lands or something like
that?
Did
you see the picture that was up in the Q&A? Or, I'm sorry, at the open workout?
No.
He looked like that. It looked like it might have been, like, from the welterweight fight or something. He was looking pretty skinny
up
there.
Some of the interviews I've seen with him over in Europe, it looks like he's feeling good. So, I mean, I guess just what I want to ask is, I mean, do you guys feel like this bodes poorly for Darren Till? Like, are we making too much of it that he didn't even know if he was going to fight until like a day or ago? Or do you feel like this is not good for him?
No, this is 100% a problem. I mean, I think everything being equal, like, if none of this existed, this is already a terrible fight for him.
Right.
Like, I think from the moment this announced, everyone's like, Darren Till's fighting Kelvin Gastelum in his first middleweight fight. Like, there was all that, you know, hoopla about Dana White saying we need to, you know, walk it back with him and et cetera, all that stuff that happened. Like, I don't think a lot of people, maybe except for Darren Till and his team, felt great about this fight for him. And then you sprinkle all this adversity on top of it, travel issues, how, you know, is this going to affect his weight cut? It seems like, you know, from what people are saying and some reports out there, like, it's not going to be an issue. I think Brett Okamoto put something out saying he talked to someone on his team and they don't expect it to be a problem, which I'd hope not at 185, but it's still like that lethargic feeling of traveling overseas, the time difference and everything. Like, there's a lot of elements here that are working against him.
Yeah.
So it's kind of it's a little rough. And then add on top the actual stylistic matchup of the fight is like as bad as it gets for him. So, like, I like Darren Till, great guy. You know, he's been very good to us over the years. Darren Till.
no, that was well done. I like that one. I like the Canadian version of it.
All that stuff, but I think this was a career misstep.
It was like you said, from the minute it was announced, everybody was like, bro, are you serious? Like, settle down a little bit. So it was already a tough fight, and you put everything you said there. Yeah, man, I feel like this is a bad spot for Darren. And I, like you said, I like him a lot. He's such a character, and he's fun, and he's great for the sport. He's great for the sport in England. I mean,
he's clearly down to have a fun night with the boys.
Yeah, he's going to steal a cab or something like that. He have a good time. So, this is rough. The rest of the main card is good. Vicente Luque, Stephen Wonderboy Thompson, big moment for Wonderboy to try to come back. Luque, man, finally getting some respect. Blagoy Ivanov versus our man, the Black Beast, Derek Lewis, man. Always like to see him fight.
Dead sexy this week.
He's light.
Dude, Dude, right? I didn't ask him how much.
He said Lightest he's being in the UFC.
He's got to have shed like 20 pounds. But he said he's gained a lot of muscle, too. So, you know, the weight, the actual number.
He just looks in good shape.
Yeah, he looks in great shape, man.
It's hard to say with him, too, because, like, when you talk to him, you don't know when he's full of shit and when, like, he's actually telling you something.
Because he'll just totally lie to your face and have fun.
But, like, I do feel, like, he did say this time off, this injury was, like, the best thing that could have happened to me because, like, I don't know if we've ever seen Derek Lewis compete healthy in the UFC or, like, as close as these fighters can actually get to healthy.
Yep.
And there it's always something. His knee is compensating for his back. His back is, like, you know, there's been all these issues that have been ongoing. And he seems to feel that, you know, he had this major knee injury. Like, he could not fight. He actually said he accepted a fight on the San Antonio card, and his team pulled him back, which is ridiculous. But, like, now he can get in there, you know, trim down on the weight. Like, it seems like this is maybe the best version of Derek Lewis we'll see. So I'm excited for that.
I'm excited for it. And Blagoy is, dude, he is tough as nails. But, I mean, he's not real mobile and fast. And I think those are the kind of people that give Derek problems, you know? Mm-hmm. So
He looks small up. And he's not a small dude. No, but he looks small across from Derek. I was like, wow.
He did look somewhat terrified in the face-off.
I was like, he looked shook.
Not that I'd say like these fighters are scared or anything, but I think that's a better way to put it.
It's funny because none of us mentioned that before, but you know, you shot the video.
Yeah.
I edited the video. And
I did social stuff.
So we didn't even mention that, but when I was editing the video, I was like, wow, he does not look comfortable in there.
At all.
He does not look good. So
at all.
Go check it out. If you haven't seen the face-off videos, which you might have skipped since we didn't have the main and co-main, go check that. See if you agree with our assessment. Gregor Gillespie versus Kevin Lee is a phenomenal fight. I like Kevin Lee a lot. You know, he's not in Vegas for this camp, but he's a Vegas guy. He's been out there for a long time, and I like Kevin Lee a lot. I do believe he's a little bit misunderstood sometimes and mischaracterized. I think he tries to sell himself a little bit more. You know, he embraced being that kind of star and being that kind of bad boy, and I think people give him a lot of shit that he doesn't deserve. But Gregor Gillespie is legit. That is a very, very tough assignment. Corey Anderson versus Johnny Walker. I'm stoked for that, man. Johnny, this dude just highlight reel moments after highlight reel moments. At some point, you wonder if it's going to stop. Meanwhile, Corey Anderson, he's got a chip on his shoulder, man. And I understand, look, he's not the Corey Anderson is the anti-Johnny Walker, right? Like, he's not, like, all highlight reel moments and viral videos and stuff. But Corey's a great dude and a hardworking guy. And like I said, he's got a chip on his shoulder that I think he wants to prove to the world that, you know, he belongs in the title fight and he's tired of getting overlooked. Makwan Amir Khani versus Shane Burgos. We've always been a big fan of Makwan's rise. He's a character. Edmund Shahbazyan versus Brad Tavares. I'm torn on that one, too, because Brad's, you know, been in Vegas forever, man. We've been covering his career for a decade. But I like Shahbazyan a lot, man.
Yeah.
This 21-year-old kid that looks really, really talented.
Gets better and better every fight.
He does.
Every fight he gets better and better. He shows a new he shows a new wrinkle in there.
It's good. So I'm torn on that fight, man. I really am. Andre Arlovski versus Jair Rosenstruck. I tell you what's funny, because Jair is Jairzinho, man. He's a heavy hitter.
Yeah.
But dude, and I love Andre Arlovski, man. I'm an Andre Arlovski homer. Just I'll throw that out there right away. I think he's one of the greatest.
You
dudes.
Might be a little bit of a homer.
A little bit of an Andre Arlovski homer. I love Andre Arlovski, but I'll say this, man. You always forget how big Andre is.
I was going to say, that was another one where you're like, holy
shit,
Andre looks huge.
Because Jair is not a small man.
He's not small
at all.
And
he stood next to him and just towered over him. Like, Andre is huge. And I always forget, like I said, how big he is. So, man, I'm really stoked for this card. No debuts on this card at all. You know, we do a rookie report every week. No newcomers. And not that newcomers are bad. I mean, obviously, it's great. We're unfilling some new talents. But I just think that's always – when it's characters that you know, it's people that you have ties
100%.
To.
I actually think I tweeted something out similar to this like a few years ago. I can't remember what card it was. I was like, something like, you know, the depth of tonight's card shows. There's no one making their debut. It's all no properties. And I think for the only time in my life, Lorenzo Fertitta retweeted me and like retweeted that post. I was like, okay, like, I guess he thinks I have a point.
But
it was like
UFC
200 or something like that.
You're tied to it. You know what I mean? Like, because you know these people.
He mistaked you for a ring card, girl. What you doing? What you doing?
You up? That what it was? You still up or something? Oh, my
you
God.
Chrissy Blair, shout out.
Classic moment. All right, listen. We will have full coverage on Saturday night's Ticket to MMA Junkie. We'll have it all here. There's three of us, so we better be able to handle our shit here in New York. The company paid a lot of money to send us here. So hopefully it's a good card. I think it's going to be entertaining. We'll try to squeeze in a little and a half action afterwards. It's tough because we get out of
it's
there
East Coast.
Super late. I was going to say, Cole Coffee might not be joining us for that one. That might be one that myself and Mike Bond
that
do.
That one gets edited on Monday or Sunday.
That's great. Yeah, it'll come out after next week. All right, we're going to go have a few frosty beverages. We need some dinner. My stomach's growling a little bit. But
happy Halloween, motherfuckers.
And thanks for listening. We'll be right back.